We play and call it work.
Hey there, guys. Quirk here. Welcome to this week's Sit and Talk with me, Quirk. So I've got a couple pages of questions from you all here. I got like 4 pages of them. Some of these questions are really weird. Before we get into that, guys, just a quick heads up. Next week is going to be a Sit and Talk with Dave. So if you have any questions for him, leave a comment in the comment section below on the Mini Wargaming website, just with Dave and then your comments. That he knows it's for him. And if you want to respond to me in any of these comments, you can do that, just put Quirk and then your comment there, but mostly it's just gonna be questions for Dave. So, 30 minutes right here on YouTube and free, and then 30 minutes in the vault. You guys know how this whole thing works. So let's get right down to it here. Boop, there's my 30 minute timer, and let's get going. First question I have here is Lucis C55. Hey Quirk, are you gonna be in Matt's role-playing game? What kind of character would you play, and will you climb the mountain one day planting the mini wargaming flag at the peak? Congratulations, Lee, on his Death Watch. Two more questions. Will you be playing Total Warhammer 2, perhaps a multiplayer versus campaign against Steve, the grudge match? And is White Dwarf good for learning how to paint? I'm looking for tips but have little money. Love the vids, happy wargaming. All right, so answering your first question here, am I gonna be in Matt's role-playing game? Yes, I'm going to be in Matt's role-playing game. The kind of character that I'm gonna play, I have no idea. Matt's going to be making all the characters from scratch, just looking up at miniatures and storylines for people like that. So the characters I'm gonna play, I kinda have to play into the role that Matt is coming up with. So I have no idea who I'm gonna be playing or what I'm gonna be playing or how I'm gonna be acting, but it's gonna be interesting because I'm probably gonna have to do some things I wouldn't normally do in a role-playing game, like actually staying and fighting. I like to run away. Would I ever climb the mountain? I've jumped on him a couple times in videos, but I don't think I've ever actually just gone out of my way and tried to climb him. So there is that. Congratulations, Lee. Will you be playing Total Warhammer 2, perhaps a multiplayer versus campaign against Steve? I do have Total Warhammer 2. I've played it a little bit. I don't believe we're going to be playing against each other. It could maybe happen at some point, but that, I don't even know if we'd record it. It's just him and I playing against each other. And last thing I have here, is White Dwarf good for learning how to paint? It is. White Dwarf does have a good number of tips on how to paint. They are very detailed. If you're looking for a little more in or specific stuff, you can always go on YouTube. We have Chris and Janine giving out painting tutorials for Mini Wargaming. You also got Duncan. And then on top of that, there's a bunch of other people out there who like to give out painted tutorials for specific armies. So I know for Grey Knights, as an example, there isn't a lot of painted tutorials on how to do Grey Knights, but there are a few people out there that show how to do the Force Weapons and how to do Silver, and it all depends on what it is you're trying to paint, but I'm sure you can definitely find some information on YouTube. So, but White Dwarf is definitely good for learning how to paint. They do have some details on there, but it's usually for the newer stuff that's coming out. So you're looking at a lot of Age of Sigmar stuff, Necromunda stuff once that starts coming out, and just anything, any new models that they've come out with. All right, next up we have Stingray Bill. Hey Quirk, I'm developing my army list for the 2nd and 11th Legions. I'm also well into their lore and what is a lot of work. Both Legions are fighting a great war with Chaos and have invaded the Warp on numerous occasions. The 11th Legions wants to absorb the Imperium into an existing empire, while the 2nd is trying to unite humanity, ending its infighting and bringing lasting peace and prosperity to the Imperium. I do hope I can share more on them, including showing you all the models that I've done. Thanks for all you do at Mini Wargaming. Keep up the good work. Dude, that sounds awesome. As just lore as a whole, I like the idea of having the two different legions kind of doing the same yet different aspects, kind of like how you have the different forms of the Inquisition. I think that's really, really cool, and I look forward to seeing more on that. WBFreak54, Quirk, I have to start by saying I don't understand why Josh always attempts to get you a nickname. It always seems forced, which I don't care for. It makes him happy. Now for a question. If you were sponsored by a water company with express understanding that you would be in breach of contract if you drank anything caffeine, what amount of money would they have to offer you to only drink and talk about water in life and on air? Please put it in American money, as Canadian money is too loony. Sorry for the pun. Also, could you, if desired, take down one demon prince with nothing but orc boys? How many would you need? Lastly, have you ever tried to braid Lee's hair or Josh's beard? If not, why not? Okay, the first question here about the water company. I don't know. I really enjoy my energy drinks, which have a ton of caffeine. I also enjoy drinking Coca-Cola and other fizzy drinks full of caffeine. So probably be a big shock to my system having to switch from it. I would probably say about, it'd have to be like a certain amount of money every time I drank a glass of water. Like, give me $100 US every time I drink a glass of water. So, just to make up for the amount of headaches and trauma my body would go through from not having the caffeine I need. Also, if you were to take on a demon prince with nothing but orc boys, how many would you need? Oh, I'm sure a unit of 30 orc boys, one with a power claw, could do it. It would take a lot of work. You would have to support them, but I mean, if you're just doing straight up orc boys, a unit of 30 could probably do it. I'm gonna stick with a unit of 30. That's my answer right there. And have I ever tried to braid Lee's hair or Josh's beard? If not, why not? Because they're scary. Lee's scary. If I even touch his hair, he'll come at me like a wrecking ball. And Josh, I don't know what's in his beard. I don't want to touch it. There's like occasions where I'll grab it because he'll tell me he washed it that morning. But otherwise, I've seen him pull stuff out of that beard that's just disgusting. So I'm like, nope, nope, I'm not touching that. I don't want to touch that. All right, next up we have Anubis 45. I almost said 54. Hiya, Quirk. Why do you think Games Workshop stopped the ability to attach captains and name characters to units such as Lucas the Trickster with Blood Claws or detachments like Grimmar's War Council? I think that's partly because they like to do the whole aura of effect thing for characters. It's part of the reason why they put in the whole you can't target characters if they have less than 10 wounds or if they're the closest model to the unit that's shooting. It also makes snipers a lot more viable, so it's a way for them to sell things like rangers and scout squads and snipers and vindicators and so on. But as a whole, I think the reason they stopped the whole attaching them to units is because they do have the aura effect, and it's not that difficult to keep these characters up or in pace with the units that you want them to buff. That's the only answer I got for you, man. Like, that's just it. It's the way they've changed the game system. It affects more than just that. It affects a lot of the Harlequin stuff, Orc stuff, big time. It affects them. There really isn't an army that it doesn't affect in a kind of negative way, but with the aura buffs and the ability to actually help more than one squad at a time, it helps pretty much everybody. All right, Big Mikey. Quirk, how's the tournament scene treating you? Can you tell us about what you've learned and how it's affecting how you build lists or play? Have you gotten your zine stuff back yet? Keep on being awesome. Okay, so the tournament scene's actually been pretty good. When I went to the Nova Open, I learned a lot about how people like to build their lists, and I've also learned that meta is a huge thing. There's a lot of people out there who struggle when it comes to building lists. And I'm not trying to rep on anybody who's at tournaments, but I saw a lot of rinse and repeat lists, or very similar lists, where it was a base, everything always auto-include in your army, whether it's Ultramarines and you have, like, Gulliman. Gulliman is always an auto-include. And then you kind of build your list around him. If you want to do crazy long-range firepower with armor, you take a bunch of Razorbacks and Land Raiders. If you want to do mobile, like, shooting, you take two Storm Ravens and let them do all the work. And again, you put everything under the Ultramarine title, and it gets to reroll the hit and reroll the wound. And I saw a lot of that, and that was just annoying. When it comes to Astra Militarum back when the Nova Open, it was just conscripts for days. Tons and tons of conscripts. Never have to worry about them breaking morale. You bring a unit of 30 of them, multiple units of 30 of them, sit them on an objective, and they just sit there all game. It doesn't matter how many you kill. Eldar was a lot of just crazy fast stuff and psychers, and Chaos Demons was a lot of just psychic. I didn't see very much in the way of variance when it came to things like that. There's the odd person here and there who would run like their own version of a list or their own take on something or something that actually played to their playstyle, but for the most part it was a lot of very much the same list. There was actually one day where I played almost identical lists back to back against two different people. They were both Ultramarine players, and it was two Storm Ravens, Gulliman, and a bunch of Razorbacks. And I was like, okay, well, that was difficult. And then the next person I played was exactly the same list, except they swapped out a couple of the Marines for Urshaker platforms. So it comes down to the whole people bring what they think is good, and a lot of people will see like, oh, this guy came up with this strategy and it's very unbeatable, I have these models, I'm gonna build that, and then just throw in a little bit of extra stuff just because I can. Numerous times I saw people playing Grey Knights and they had the Grandmaster in Nemesis Dreadknight armor, and they were playing it wrong because somebody out there posted a thing saying if you give him Gate of Infinity and Sanctuary, he has a 3-up invulnerable save and can jump around the board, and if he's your warlord, he gets the rerolling charge because of the warlord trait first to the fray. You're almost right. Somebody messed that up and gave him the ability to take two powers. He can cast two powers, but he can only take one Grey Knight power. So he has to take either Hammer Hand, like any of the six that are available to Grey Knights, and the other one he can cast is Smite. And there were numerous times where I was playing against somebody who would say, okay, I'm going to cast Sanctuary. Okay, I got that off. Now I'm going to cast Hammer Hand. I'd have to stop them and say, okay, well, what's casting Hammer Hand? Because it's not your Grandmaster. And I got into arguments and disputes with about three different people, and I had to show them in the book, no, it's they can take one additional power, but they can cast two. So it was a lot of that, and everybody who I talked about that was saying, well, no, if you look at Battlescribe, or if you look at this guy's list online, yeah, that's fine. Battlescribe and people's lists and everything, they're open to human error, and somebody can misread something because the first thing on it says that he can cast two powers. And then it goes on to say he can also take one power from the Grey Knight Discipline and Smite. So people kind of jump the gun on that one, and it's like, okay, well, no, you're not following the rules correctly. And there's a couple people who, in the second day there, I'm like, okay, have you been doing this trick the entire tournament? Like, if you've done this the past three games, you might not be where you're supposed to be in this tournament because you've been cheating. So that came up a little bit with the tournament scene. But I have been seeing a lot of meta lists coming out. I'm actually finding I enjoy going to smaller tournaments now more than big tournaments. Like, I'm going to the Renegade Open next week. So that's going to be in Minnesota. Long drive. It's going to be a long drive out there, so hopefully I can grab an audiobook or something. But I am excited to go to a bigger tournament, but I'm also kind of dreading it because it means I'm going to probably have to play against the same list two or three times. Whereas when I go to a smaller tournament, that's, you know, it's one afternoon, everybody plays three games. It's very rare that you see the same list. It's very rare that in a smaller tournament of, you know, 15 to 20 people, you see duplicate lists. Like, Chris and I went to a tournament last Saturday, and he brought Eldar, I brought my demons, ran them as Renegades and Heretics, but I saw Custodes there, I saw Nids there, I saw Death Guard, I saw somebody brought Sisters, like, just a huge array of armies. There was very little, like, overlap of different army, or the same army. And even when it came down to the same army, they were built completely different ways. So it was nice to see this expansion and this change. Like, there was two guard players. One person was playing very artillery heavy, and the other person was playing very body heavy. And it was just, this is really nice to see, because even though I'm playing the same army, I'm not playing the same list. I don't have to deal with the same problems, and it's nice to see this change, and it's nice to see this variance in the matchups. Whereas when you go to a bigger tournament, it's like, okay, let's see how many people have the exact same list. Okay, we got five people here that are running the same core detachments. Great. So that's one of the things I've been noticing big time. And it'd be nice to see people not rely so much on the internet and power gaming. Like, obviously you get those people who are win at all costs. You get the power gamers. You get everybody out there trying to be, you know, number one. But when I see somebody out there who's like, you know, I took third in a tournament with this list, and the question that I always want to ask them is, did you come up with that list, or was that something that you found, or is that something that you came, like altered from another tournament winning list, or is that, it's very, very common for me to see people who are taking first and second in these tournaments that are just replicating what took first and second in other tournaments with the same list. So it would be nice to see people actually, not so much be original, but kind of, you know, build your own army, build your own list, build something with your own playstyle. There are numerous tricks out there for every single army that somebody can play. The ones that are limited, to the best of my knowledge right now, are things like Death Watch. Messed me up with that one. Harlequins. Honestly, those are the only two that come to mind right off the top of my head, because they have a very limited amount of models. Sisters. But even Sisters have the ability to do things like that. And then with the keyword availability, it's very, very easy with the Imperium keyword to just build these crazy lists. So I'm finding more often than not, I wish people would be a little bit more original with their lists, and it'd be nice to not have to play the same list two or three times at bigger tournaments. Another thing that I've also noticed with tournaments is all these tournament organizers and operators and TOs, and I know I just said like the same thing three times there, they all want to put their own little spin on the rules and the restrictions because they are afraid of power gamers, and they want to stop power gamers, and they want to eliminate the power creep and things like that. So a lot of tournaments now are limiting Forge World to either 0 to 1 per your army, so you can only bring one Forge World unit of that kind per your army, or 0 to 1 per detachment. So take, for example, Malefic Lords. If you have Malefic Lords, but they have this rule, you're limited to one Malefic Lord, maybe three if you bring one in each of your detachments. I get it. I see where you're going with that. You want to kind of stop people from just bringing these crazy spam Forge World lists. But at the same point in time, even the crazy spam Forge World lists are very easy to beat when you know what you're going up against. And I wish tournament organizers would just kind of leave it open. The Nova Open was wide open to whatever you want to bring. You want to bring Forge World, you bring Forge World. Three detachments, 2,000 points, that's your limit. Go nuts. And there were some people out there who brought some really crazy lists. Like, there was the one guy who I think took second or third. He had, out of 8 games, he had 7 perfect games and then 1 perfect loss, which gave him second or third, I don't remember off the top of my head. But his list was a lot of Malefic Lords, a lot of demons, chaos all over the place. And I was like, that's a really cool list, and no one else here has brought that. That was really cool. There was no limitations, so there's nothing stopping him from bringing this crazy list. And then you go to these Renegade Open, where Forge World is limited to 0-1. Period. End of sentence. So I've had to kind of rethink my list a little bit, because the list that I plan on taking is my Brimstones. I'm going to take my Brimstones, I'm going to take some Heralds, I'm going to take some Exalted Flamers, I'm going to take some Chaos Spawn, because they're actually really good now. But then I was going to take a bunch of Forge World stuff, and my thought process was, well, I can save a lot of points on my HQ choice for all these battalions by dropping the Heralds and taking Malefic Lords. No, I can't do that now. I have to take them. I can only take one Malefic Lord, so I'm only bringing one Malefic Lord because it saves me a couple extra points here. But I don't get the benefits that I get for having Heralds. Like, I don't have a longer smite range. I don't get -1 to hit if a changeling's nearby. And then on top of that, it was the other thing I wanted to bring was a bunch of Earthshaker platforms. Now I'm limited to one unit of Earthshaker platforms. So I found a workaround for that where I can bring platforms, I can bring carriages, and I can bring Basilisks. But there's more points being invested into that than what I would have done if I was allowed to do what I wanted to bring, and that would have meant that I could have altered my list a little bit and been more original with my plan. Now I have to alter my list to match the TO's requirements for building a list, which isn't even GW's requirement for building a list, it's their own version. So there was that, and then all these other people are trying to think of new ways to make missions fair, and right now the closest one that I've seen for making missions fair is the basically playing the end game versus playing a progressive scoring round. So the way that works is, take the relic as an example. So the relic is single objective, middle of the board, you hold that, at the end of the game you win. That makes sense. The way they have it designed so that it kind of appeals to both armies is that if you're holding the relic, you score a point. If you have more objectives, because they change this, that the relic's in the middle and then you have 2 objectives in your deployment zone and 2 objectives in your opponent's deployment zone. So from between turn 2 and turn 6, I believe, if you're holding the relic, you score a point. If you're holding both your home objectives, you score a point. If you're holding both your home objectives, the relic, and one of your opponent's objectives, you score 3 points. So it kind of matches that way. You do that between turns 2 and 6 or 5, and you try and score your points that way so that you get your primary score of 9. So you want to keep doing that so you get 9 points. Whereas the endgame one now is the relic is worth 5 points, your home bases are worth 1 point, and your opponents are worth 2 points. So you can either play the progressive game where, you know, I'm going to grab the objective, I'm not going to survive very long, but I'm going to grab that objective, I'm going to hold my bases, I'm going to try and score as many points as I can throughout the turns, and make my opponent work to try and stop me from scoring points. And then your opponent can say, well, I'm going to go for the endgame because I'm going to try and kill him and hold everything at the end. And you get this very interesting mashup. Whereas now you see people coming out and just like, okay, well, we're going to give out 4 tokens, and each token represents one of the games that are available. So you have Massacre, Relic, I can't even think of what the other ones are, Crusader or something. Anyway, you have these 4 different objectives, and you can say, okay, well, I'm going to play the Relic. And your opponent can say, okay, well, I'm playing Massacre. So now your job is to try and get the Relic and hold it till the end of the game, whereas your opponent's job is to try and kill as many units as they can. That's really weird. That doesn't really work very well. And it doesn't work for people playing the armies that they want to play effectively, whereas I like the progressive versus the endgame one a little bit better because it gives you those options, and then you have all the secondary objectives available to you, so you have a list of 12 objectives that you can pick from. You pick 3, and if it suits your army a little bit better than the Slay the Warlord, First Blood, and Linebreaker, you can use those, and those are a nice way to get secondary objectives. And I very much like that tournament style where all these other TOs are coming up with these really weird secondaries, tertiaries, primary mission mix and mashups. I don't really care for it. So it'd be nice to see everybody kind of either adopt the Nova's tournament setting, which is the progressive endgame, or ITC's, which is just straight out of the book. you play the way you're supposed to play. ITC has its own little variants on how to build army lists, and I agree with that. What they kind of do is everything's allowed, but some of the main keywords are eliminated. So things like Chaos are taken out, Imperium are taken out, Eldari are taken out. So you can't have all the different armies that are under the Imperium keywords. You can't have like Ultramarines with Sisters, with Custodes, with Grey Knights, because they're all under the Imperium keyword. You're kind of limited to, okay, Space Marine Chapters as one, Adeptus Sororitas is another, Ministerium, like these are all limited to themselves. And I kind of like that a little bit better, because it stops people from doing the whole thing they did back in 7th, where it's like, here's my army, I've got 7 books that I need to keep track of, because each of these different guys are from different things, and on and on and on. So that's kind of how I've been feeling a little bit about the tournament scene and everything like that. I do very much enjoy the tournament scene. I'm having a lot of fun being able to play competitive and bring, you know, hard and fast lists and seeing how they do, going up against other people. And it's no longer a fluffy, let's kind of see how the story plays out. It's very much a, I want to see if I'm a better tactician, list builder, and luckier than you are. So luck doesn't usually work for me. I kind of have to rely on the math and the list building and tactics. So, but yeah, that's how I've been feeling about the tournament scene. As for getting my zine stuff back, nope, I haven't got it back yet. Don't know where it is. Actually, that's a lie. It's in Bosnia somewhere, I think. All right, moving on from there. That was actually a really long question. Sorry about that, guys. Next up, we have the Danish Viking Alex. Hey, Quirk. Thanks for all your awesome content.
Oh, you're welcome.
A couple of questions. There was a video a while back when Matt said your Zinch demons away. When will you get them back?
I don't know.
I do not know at all. Number two, I saw you make an Age of Sigmar battle report where you had a battalion that you deployed in one drop. Why? Is that a rule? If yes, where is it written? I think I mixed that up because there is the, I'm pretty sure there's a rule in the rule book. I don't know if it got taken out in the new General's Handbook. I have to double check that. That was me just being on autopilot from before. But it was that if you have a War Scroll Battalion, it actually gets dropped as a single drop. I don't remember what page it's on. I know it's in the rulebook somewhere. I'll have to double check it now because you're making me wonder about that. But that's the reason why, because I believe there's a rule saying battalions are treated as a single drop. Next up we have, number three. In most of my 40k games with Zinch Demons, I have played Maelstrom of War missions, but I have tried a few Eternal War as well. My question is regarding the Screamers. Because in Maelstrom of War missions, they are awesome objective takers. How would you use them in Eternal War missions where you basically have to kill as much as your opponent as possible? They don't strike me as the best close combat unit, so how would you put them to good use?
Okay.
Screamers are amazing. Not because they're really good in close combat. Obviously, they don't have shooting. They are your movement phase dominators. They have a base movement of 16. So these little guys, come here, you. These little guys right here fly at 16 inches. You roll a die, that means minimum they're going 17 when they advance. They can go up to 22 if you get a good one off. They have a special rule, and I believe it's like slashing talons or something like that, that in the movement phase, when they advance, for every model in the unit, so each one of these, that passes over a unit, you can roll a die. And on a 6, that unit suffers a mortal wound. Now, out of habit, people take these in units of 3 because that's the minimum unit size requirement. Take them in units of 9. And in the movement phase, have them come screaming, pun intended, across the board, over top of a unit. That means you get 9 dice to roll over top of that unit, which means in the movement phase, you can average 1.5 mortal wounds. Because, you know, 9 dice, 6 is almost a guarantee out of the laws of averages, and then 3 you give a 50% chance again under the laws of averages. So, unit of 9 of these in the movement phase can do 1.5 mortal wounds on average. So, what that means is you can target characters with it because it says you pick a unit you fly over. So, if somebody's got a guard unit and their commander or whatever is hiding in the back, have them go flying over top of him and you roll those 9 dice. Each 6 is a mortal wound in the movement phase. That's not even shooting. That's not, yeah, I moved and you did damage. That's awesome. So that's really good for killing off characters. They are your character hunters. And on top of that, they have the 4-up invuln. They're stinking fast. And they have the fly keyword, which means they can break out of combat as well. So with all these nice little buffs available to them, they've got that 4-up invuln, which means they're negating half the damage that would normally be dealt to them. So out of every two wounds that somebody causes, they're only taking 1, mathematically. And then they're, what? 3 wounds apiece, 4 wounds apiece, so it's I'm going to go with 3 wounds apiece just for this one. This is 27 wounds in a unit that's flying across the board, just mortal wounding stuff in the movement phase. That's pretty sweet. And then on top of that, if they get tied up in combat, they can fly, so they can just fall back, and you can advance when you fall back, so you can, again, do that movement trick and just mortal wound stuff like crazy. So that's why Screamers are awesome, in my opinion, but you need to take them in max squads. That was actually something I was going to take in my tournament list before somebody sent them off to Bosnia. So those are the only three I have left. All right. Next question we have here. Oh, sorry. You have one last question. Since you were very fond of Tzeentch Demons, how do you feel about Thousand Suns? Does Mini Wargaming have minis for a Thousand Suns army? I would really like to see a battle report where Thousand Suns, led by Magnus, do battle against Death Guard, led by Mortarion. Happy Wargaming. That would be really interesting, just because I feel like that would be kind of an example of an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, because Thousand Suns are really, really good at putting out the damage. You've got the Rubric Marines with the Flamers that just decimate stuff. Just gone with the stratagems. You can. It's gross. Just gonna leave it at that. It's gross. But we've also got Death Guard that have disgusting resilience, so they can just take a ton of damage and keep on going. So you kind of have the Mortarion Magnus fight going on, and then all the little guys around trying to fight as well. We do have the minis available for it. I will see what I can do about getting that battle report done for you. I just need to find somebody and some time to play Death Guard. I'll work on that. All right. Next up we have MadMax_IZ. Quirk, love your content, really appreciate that you tried different 40k armies. Could you possibly play more Adeptus Ministarum in the future? Sure, absolutely. I'm having a lot of fun kind of jumping between armies. I know you guys like to jump all over me for rules on that one. Especially with like the Sisters of Battle one that I recently did. Keep in mind, guys, when I'm doing these battle reports where it's just like, okay, here's an army I've never played before, there's a good chance that I just read through their codex 30 minutes ago and built a list just because like that's what I read really quick and that's what seemed good. So there's a good chance I'm going to mess stuff up, like I did with the Sisters, where it was like, okay, I don't know what miniature this is supposed to be, so I'm going to use this one as that one, and so on and so forth. A couple of you guys emailed me about that. Again, I had just read that codex 30 minutes before actually filming, so I know we have the codex there and everybody jumps in the hole. Well, you have the codex right there, how can you mess up the rules? Thing is, we're filming, we're trying to play the game, and on top of that, we'll read something, think that that's what it was supposed to be, and then when we go to do the thing, we're just like, okay, well, I remember this from there, I think. I'm just going to do that because that's what I think I just did. And then afterwards, like, oh, no, I messed that up. It's human error. It does happen. So kind of keep that in mind when you see me trying a new army I've never played before. There's a good chance I just read that like 30 minutes before I started filming. Also, you have another one here. Love the Death Watch campaign, but I couldn't help but notice your missions seem to be way harder than Steve's. Is that just you being unlucky like usual, or maybe Matt just likes to watch you squirm? I think it's a combination of unlucky, squirming, and my tendency to make things more difficult on myself. There's a lot of the missions that I've been doing in the Death Watch campaign where I was like, okay, here's the easy answer. Nope. Let's try something a little more difficult and try and be a little bit more entertaining. I do that with my battle reports too, where it's like, okay, here's the clear answer, but if I can pull this off, it'd be so much cooler. So I'm going to go for the cool factor here and see if I can do that. So that's where that comes in. All right. I got enough time to probably answer one last question here before we jump into the vault. We have Sin City's only good insert time of day here. Oh, afternoon, Quirk. First things first, very happy to see you uploading content to your personal channel again, even if it's not my favorite morning drive anymore. Keep up the hard work. Oh, thank you. I have been uploading a few things to my channel. It's mostly me just playing games with the guys around here and then doing Monday Night Blood Bowl. So if you're a Blood Bowl fan and you want to hear me try and do some commentary while I try and play at the same time, you can check that out. Back to business. I've almost got my Necron army to a state I'm happy with, and I'm thinking it's time to start a second army. I'm liking how the new Primaris Marines look, and I've got a tiny amount of Space Marines already. In your opinion, which Primaris are the best to start with if you're building up a new army? And I'm willing to go any chapter, though fluff-wise, I like Salamanders and White Scars the most. Okay. So, all right. So if you go with White Scars, you, I'm trying to remember what they do. You got me trying to remember a codex and all the different chapters and everything. So before I try and remember what salamanders and white scars do, what I've always noticed right now with Primaris Marines, and again this goes back to the whole tournament scene, is that people who bring Primaris usually like to take the Hellblasters. And the reason they take those is because you can overcharge them like crazy, and then if you have Gulliman standing by, you can re-roll everything. So you don't have to worry so much about rolling the ones, so you don't slay yourself, and on top of that, they're just really, really good. The repulsor tank is amazing. I'm going to stop this before it makes noise. The repulsor tank is absolutely amazing. It's devastating amount of firepower, and it just gets work done. That's pretty much all I can think of right there. If you want to go Dark Angels, if you take, I think it's Dark Angels. I'm probably wrong on that one. Whoever Azrael's with, he has a neat little 6-inch bubble that everybody who has the same chapter as him, any unit that has the same chapter as him, gets a 4-up and vulnerable save. So they're very good at bunkering down with a lot of Devastator squads and Dreadnoughts and just anything you can think of that has crazy long range. You bunker down with him and just shoot like crazy. Just shoot him. It works. With the 4-up invul, it makes them incredibly tanky. You just gotta watch out for those psychic powers that do mortal wounds. As for salamanders and white scars, I do not remember what they do. Pretty sure salamanders is like +1 toughness to your warlord, and they get to re-roll something. I'm sorry, man. I'd have to double check and look at these. Off the top of my head, though, for starting off with the primary stuff, get yourself a repulsor tank because it is a transport for them. It's the same idea with Space Marines. You want to get something that can transport them, like a Land Raider or a Rhino. I almost said Razorback. They are transports, but not as many. And then I'm a big fan of the Hellblasters just because you get those amazing plasma stuff doing whatever you want. Aggressors are really good, too. If you have aggressors with the flamethrowers, they just melt whatever you want. So if you want to stick with salamanders and do the flamethrower things, get aggressors because they can throw, I think it's 4d6 auto hits with their per model with their flame attacks. So they just kill whatever you want. That's about all the advice I can give you on that one, man. I'm sorry. I haven't looked at this Space Marine Codex in a while. It's not even in here, so I can't even grab it to double check for you. But if you want to email me, I'd be more than happy to take a look further for you and give you some more advice. It's quirk@miniwargaming.com. Go ahead and shoot me an email. Just, you know, let me know it's you and we'll try and figure something out. Anyway, guys, that's going to be our 30 minutes. Goes by pretty quick, right? So I'm going to go ahead and go through the other half of these. I've got, it looks like about another page and a half worth of questions. So go ahead and check that out in the vault, link in the description below. I will see you guys there. One last reminder before I go, next week is going to be a sit and talk with Dave. So if you have any questions for him, in the comment section below on the website, put Dave and then your comment so he knows it's for him. And otherwise, guys, thank you so much for watching. Happy Wargaming.
Thanks so much, guys. I'm not going to be doing the sit and talk this week just because I am going to be at Warhammer World. So when you're watching this, I'll probably either be there or almost there or somewhere in the warp. Either way, the reason why there's no sit and talk by me this week is because I am in the UK. I have skipped and hopped and jumped across the pond and having the time of my life. That was not a question. I just like to do that. I like to throw Rob off. Rob is the one filming right now. And I love to tease Rob because Rob is one of those guys where when he shaves his beard, I don't recognize him. I don't even know.
I'm clutching his head. Clutch, clutch.
Thank you.